Oh my God, you're so right. So now it's like, how much sugar can we cram into beer?
Exactly. Sometimes it just hits right. Sometimes the moment just comes to us.
That was perfect. Yeah, couldn't be better.
Oh my goodness. Hey everybody, I'm Kai Rizdo. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Nothing much changes here. Making today make sense.
That's right. I'm Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. It is Monday, also known as What Did We Miss Monday, where we're going to just do a quick run through. Maybe not that quick. I mean, I say quick, but I don't know what's going to happen because there's a lot of links in today's rundown.
Yeah.
Lots of them. Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of mine are all the same story. I think I agree with you that your first link is really the story of America right now, by the way.
I think it kind of is, and I think it kind of hit me this weekend. So my first link is a political article from this weekend, the headline of which is Trump holds fast to his election lies as the GOP establishment hugs him tighter. So the former president went out to Iowa this weekend, did a rally. Iowa, of course, first in line in the primaries and caucuses and all that jazz. It's the bellwether, blah, blah, blah. And up there on stage with him was 86, I believe he is, year old Senator Chuck Grassley, who's been in office from Iowa since like God was a boy. Whoops. Hang on. There goes the leaf blower, which gets into one of my other stories. Actually,
it's amazing.
It kind of does.
It's like you planned it.
It kind of does.
I think he's 88, like Chuck Grassley.
Is he 88? Yeah. Okay.
And he's never
leaving. I believe however old you tell me he is. But he was up there on stage accepting the endorsement of the former president for a race that Chuck Grassley is going to win, hands down. I'm going to just try to talk through it because it should be gone in like 10 seconds, I promise.
Totally.
There it goes. It's fading. All right. So the reason that caught me was two reasons. Number one, I think that the premise of this headline is exactly right. The GOP establishment is wrapping its arms around Donald Trump, right? Mm-hmm. And this became crystal clear to me this weekend. I mean, we've known it's coming. It's been kind of abstract, but now it's kind of real. And number two, until the Democrats took Congress, Chuck Grassley was third in line for the presidency, right? It goes the vice president, Speaker of the House, and the Senate President Pro Tem, which was Chuck Grassley when the Republicans were in charge. And holy cow. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yep.
And all the talk about soft coup and it's coming back and all that jazz, it just... I've known it and I've seen it, and this weekend it just kind of crystallized for me, and it makes me despair a little bit.
Yeah, there is polling out. I'm looking up the Bulwark newsletter that I get. There is polling out that says, you know, obviously President Biden has been going through a dip in the polls, this newsletter points out though that the really bad part of the current dip is that none of them, despite literally, you know, most of this party now, there were some sort of brief condemnations after January 6th, but now we see, you know, Steve Scalise, Representative Steve Scalise this weekend refusing to say that President Biden won the election. But according to at least this polling, people don't blame Republicans for what is currently happening in the United States, right? So they just don't, the information wall is so complete. And to be fair, right, like the Democrats are a hot mess, somewhat as usual. Sure. And it's not that encouraging when you look at what is coming our way. You know, it's not that encouraging when you look at the idea that a permanent and firmly entrenched minority rule is the plan. And that the bulk of this party is on board with the plan.
And I can't decide. Sorry, we're getting a little off topic here, and this is probably better for a Friday and a beer. I can't decide what I ought to do about it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've been like, you read a lot of history. I read a lot of history. Yeah. Like at some point. It's hard to say it as a journalist because we're journalists we feel that we should have an impact in the world, that our reporting should lead to outcomes, and that we've seen all of this reporting that showed, you know, corruption and neglect and bad behavior and failure to protect Americans, 700,000 of whom have now died of a disease, and maybe up to 600,000 of those deaths might have been preventable. We don't know. But we do know that a lot of it was preventable, and it's not getting through. So, like, if we're losing the information war, I guess we can keep...
What are we even doing?
Trying.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It takes work. Okay, this is a huge tangent, but I'm just going here. I was thinking about Andrew Yang this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And because I saw some tweet about... I think he went on the Tucker Carlson show and got yelled at about it. And then he was tweeting about how, like, we have to put aside our differences and come together. And he's like a third party guy now. And I was like, you know, I feel I have questions because I feel like anybody who ends up as a third party candidate is often like we find out that they're backed by somebody else or, you know, like there's some reason. And I was like, wait, isn't Andrew Yang the tech guy? Because if that's true, then he more than anybody should understand network effects, which is like, third parties and alternative social networks to Facebook are never going to work because nobody's there and nobody's on them.
Right.
And then I looked up his Wikipedia entry because I was like, what is the deal with this? Is he really like a tech guy? And shouldn't he understand that network effects are the key and you should make this change, like change from within? And, you know, a party with no numbers is doomed to lose. And I found a portrait of a person who's like really bounced around a lot, right? Who had this sort of leg up in his life because of brilliant freaking parents who sent him to great schools. And then you really see this resume that's like, and then he did this and then he did that. And then he sort of, and then a lot of times like a friend brought him in on their thing and then he took over that thing. And I came away and I was thinking about this and also American politics that like my perception was this is a guy who doesn't want to do the work. Like, this is a guy who wanted to show up, win the presidency, make a big change, didn't. So then he was like, well, I'm just going to go this other way. I'm okay. I'm going to start this third party. Whereas, like, you hear someone like Stacey Abrams talk about...
Who has done the work. Holy cow.
The literal decades of work that it takes. So are we a country who does the work? Or are we, you know, like, the big bad and the this and that? And like,
That was a long wind-up to a really insightful point. A really insightful point. Yeah.
Thanks.
Are we I'm glad I got there eventually. The you did. I was wondering. So look, I'm not sure we do the work anymore. I mean, I think day in, day out, millions of people in this country do. But I think as a whole, I don't know.
Or do we think that – I mean – certainly, there are huge issues there. In fact, another thing I was reading today was that there's a poll that just came out. I think it's Pew that talks about Americans' confidence, who they trust. And it was like a very slim majority of Americans trust America, if that makes sense. They trust the American people to, by and large, make the right decisions. But then there's a huge gap when you get to how much they trust Congress. So Americans trust other Americans, but they trust the institutions of government like at 30% or 20%. And it shows you that there is this big disconnect between our elected representatives who, you know, in some cases may represent the districts that they came from, but in other cases may represent the companies who gave them the most money or the super gerrymandered specific special interest districts that put them there.
Yeah.
So it just takes more work. I mean, honestly, all we do is keep working. Love, Grandma Pat. More work, black coffee. Let's get it done.
So, you know, like, look, it's called the American experiment for a reason, right? It is, nothing is preordained. It is experimental every single day. And in the larger context, experiments fail. And so do the work. That was such
or
a great
turn. Or they evolve, right?
That
there's no, like,
that
end.
That was such a great turn. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Okay. What
else? Okay. I don't know.
I'll do a couple of quickies. So Governor Gavin Newsom in California this weekend signed a law that's going to outlaw gas-powered lawnmowers and leaf blowers, which just interrupted the first 3 minutes of this podcast. And that's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing. Not only are they loud and noisy and whatever, but also they're dirty, dirty, dirty. And that's just a huge plus. That's just a huge plus.
I didn't know they were so
just
dirty.
Just
want
to make sure we all knew that. Yeah, they are. They're horribly dirty, those two-stroke engines. And then my final item, which kind of leads into your first item, Frances Haugen, the whistleblower for Facebook, is going to have a meeting with the Facebook Oversight Board, which will be really interesting because, really, Oversight Board, how much good are we actually doing anyway? Okay, that's
it. Yeah, but her tweet was like fire.
I know. Yeah.
Facebook has lied to the board repeatedly, she wrote, and I am looking forward to sharing the truth with them. Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they can do, but I guess we're about to find out.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, that is an entree into my four links, which sounds like it's going to go for another 20 minutes, but it's really not because they are all basically the same story. And they're stories about employees making noise. And it's so interesting because we're in this moment of like the great resignation and all of these employees who are like, wow, maybe work kind of sucks. Like maybe we've been treated like crap this whole time. I don't know. Or they're just ready to do something different. But you have Frances Haugen coming out and then Facebook all of a sudden, I mean, making the rounds on Meet the Press and the Sunday politics shows being like, it's okay, we're going to limit politics, we're going to boost friends. Like, they may not be apologizing, but they are making changes in response. Apple, this
never happened. No, sorry, wait, back up. It was Nick Clegg making the rounds on Sunday shows. Yes, who's the spokesman for Facebook.
Facebook writ large, but yes, Nick Clegg, their spokesman. Yeah. There's a fascinating story in Business Insider about Apple's troubles in the healthcare space, which we talked about, like that's a hard thing to crack, but that the kind of overriding issue is that Apple doesn't seem to want to take two things. One, Apple doesn't seem to want to take any criticism at all and seems to boot everyone who criticizes it internally. Two, there are issues with potentially with data integrity. And three, they really just want their health stuff to sell watches. But the interesting part to me is that you have a company that isn't willing to hear internal feedback. And in fact, it really cracks down hard and always has on employees who say negative things or raise issues. But now you have employees speaking out about it loudly on Twitter, like this Ashley M. Glovik person who had been fired about a month ago. Because she was like, hey, we're on a super fun toxic waste dump and I'm worried about it. And then like got this call from a guy who specializes in interrogation, according to LinkedIn, and then got fired.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that we're just finding that companies that are choosing to be this inflexible are facing some backlash. Yep. And it is on that note that I say that Netflix, which, you know, aired another Dave Chappelle special in which he said totally transphobic things, full stop. Like, I don't come at me with your Dave Chappelle's just making jokes. They were transphobic, period. A Netflix employee tweeted about it, like, this is transphobic and we don't like it. And Netflix suspended the employee, ostensibly because that person and another employee tried to come to a meeting that was above their pay grade. But I'm pretty sure we can guess it's actually because of the tweet. Yeah, I mean, A, you fire people for trying to come to meetings that are above your pay grade?
Yeah, right?
Wow.
That's tough, man.
Wow.
That's a little harsh.
And then B, someone tweets like, wow, that was a really crappy thing that we aired on our network, and then they get fired. I mean, it's this weird push and pull where employees are feeling their oats, and they're flexing their power, and companies are trying to figure out how to deal, and a lot of them are breaking, not bending.
Yeah, it's funny because the right thing is the easier path, but for some reason the companies don't see this.
Yeah.
And they let money get in the way. Anyway.
Yep.
Anyway, and I think super quick, make me smile. We'll get out the way. Super quick. All right, we got
a couple of them. Yep. We're twins.
How many do we have, Molly? Do we have a couple?
We're the same person. You go.
All right, go ahead. All right, I'll go first real quick. So they are both external to Ms. Wood and myself. The first is from Marissa Cabrera, our producer, flagging the president's proclamation about Indigenous Peoples Day today. Also, I just want to point out a tweet by the brand newest reporter at Marketplace, Savannah Marr, who is of Native descent, right? She's Native American. She's filing for us from Albuquerque and pointed out today there are very few Native American reporters in public radio. Possibly she is the first staff reporter. And she's here to help is what her message was. And I thought we should just amplify that. That's all.
Yes. That's so funny. I retweeted that just before the show. And she pointed out it should not have taken that long, and I said, I'm really grateful that we're the spot that Savannah landed.
Yep.
She helped us a lot, actually, prepare for the ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Act episode that we did last week. Yep.
Yep.
And then a listener, I love this, and this is my old stomping grounds, and I definitely think we need to go on a road trip. A listener, Alice in Arlington, Virginia, shared a piece in the Washington Post about llama trekking in Yellowstone National Park. Yes, please. I would like to do this. I want to go to the llamas in Yellowstone.
It reminds me of your like goat yoga Zooms or whatever it was early in this pandemic. You were
to
go about this goat yoga, whatever they were.
Give me the critters. Give them to me. Backpacking with llamas. Oh, I'm going. God. You just wait. Mark my words. Timestamp it. That's it. That's
noted.
All we got.
Okay.
That is it for today. Tomorrow, I'm excited. We finally, thanks for your patience, everyone, get to talk about batteries. Specifically what batteries mean for long-term energy storage and our energy transition, because I don't know if you've heard, totally not going to survive climate change if we don't make some major changes to how we collect and distribute energy and power, and it may involve some really big batteries. So subscribe to Make Me Smart in your favorite podcast app, and then it will just pop up tomorrow morning. It'll be right there for you.
It's like magic. Send us your questions as well, comments on this or anything else you hear us talk about. Plus your Make Me Smile suggestions, please. You can reach us at makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can just call us, leave us a voice message. Our phone number, I'm sorry, I was thinking about that audio thing we've got on the website too. You can just click on that button and attach an audio file. But anyway, our phone number is 508-827-6278. I know, 508-UB-SMART. Dial us up, leave us a message.
And yeah, makemesmart.org. You can like send us a little email and attach an audio thing. I kind of want to try it. I've never done that on the internet. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera with help from the absolutely delightful Marque Green. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe of The Impeccable Timing. Tony Wagner writes our newsletters.
Bridget Bodner is the senior producer of this podcast, the director of On Demand, and now officially in charge, oh my goodness, is Donna Tan.
Oh my goodness. You remember her when she was just our fill-in senior producer.
This podcast.
We knew her when.
She's been kicked upstairs.
She's in charge.
Donna, 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 Donna.
And P.S., thank goodness.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.